Bonjour! How's everybody doing out there?
We hope you're doing well. We hope you enjoyed our royalty-free theme song. You may have heard it before. My name is Matthew Ederer, and this is the AEW Dynamite Deep Dive. Today we will be discussing AEW Dynamite number 215 live from the Toyota Arena in Ontario, California, United States of America. A weird show. This was a strange go-home show for Dynamite. Usually the go-home shows, the Dynamite before the pay-per-view, are pretty solid. This was a strange one. Some hits and some misses. The most unhinged street fight you've ever seen. The most unhinged eight-man hardcore match. We'll talk about that in the main event. But let us get right into the action. We start this show actually with a recap of last week and a rundown of our card this evening. That's a good idea, especially for the show before the pay-per-view. Keep your fan base abreast of what's going on. Let them know what you've been doing, because not everybody is watching every week. Only suckers like me. That brings us to our first match of the evening, a tag team attraction. The Blackpool Combat Club of Jon Moxley and Wheeler Yuta versus Hook, Son of Taz, and Orange Cassidy. 2v2 matchup here. The story of this match, the undersized, I guess, Wheeler Yuta is the same size as Hook and Cassidy, but, you know, the smaller, handsome baby faces. Orange Cassidy and Hook fighting from underneath, as they say. They were getting their ass kicked in this tag team match, and then they lost. A pretty, not dominant, but a strong performance here by the Blackpool Combat Club, Jon Moxley in specific, but Wheeler Yuta was made to look like a badass as well in this match. It starts with the Blackpool Combat Club making their entrance through the crowd, as they do, and Orange Cassidy and Hook go and attack them amongst the people before they can even make it to the ring, starting this match out hot. I like that idea. It made sense for these guys in character to want to, you know, prove that they got some Moxley, some Jon Moxley in them, to go bring the fight to the meaner, badder dudes. And also it made sense just in terms of the television show, start this thing out as hot as possible. And from there we got a kind of one-sided affair. It was Hook going 50-50 with Yuta and mostly losing to Moxley in the little bit of time that they had in there. And Orange Cassidy mostly selling on the outside, kind of a handicapped Hook here, going 2v1 versus the Blackpool Combat Club. I felt like every single match, including the women's match, went through a commercial break on this show, which is a little bit annoying. It's kind of funny. As Werner Herzog said on the Conan O'Brien podcast, it's funny how they go through commercials in the middle of the fights. It's not like the fights are important here in wrestling. What's important is Vince McMahon doing drugs and sleeping with strippers and his wife raising out of a wheelchair, etc. Oh, I don't know if Vince McMahon ever did drugs on camera, though. He's done a lot of things, a lot of bad things. Drugs aren't necessarily bad. Necessarily. You know, sometimes they are. What are we talking about again? Oh, yeah. AEW Dynamite, number 215, live from the Toyota Center in Ontario, California, United States of America. And this was indeed a tag team match. You can picture this match in your head. It was Hook selling hard for these guys, making brief comebacks. At one point, Orange Cassidy does make his hot tag, hits his flying DDT on Jon Moxley. They're really setting up Orange Cassidy and Jon Moxley quite well, but I think they're almost telegraphing that Orange Cassidy has to win this time. Orange Cassidy is going to beat Jon Moxley at the pay-per-view, or they've really wasted a lot of hard work that they've put into this guy. At one point in this match, Jon Moxley actually does Orange Cassidy's mocking kicks, his little dinky kicks to a kneeling opponent before actually, you know, colliding with a couple, actually hitting this man hard with a couple boots. Yeah, they really were trying to hammer home that Hook and Wheeler Yuta are on the same level heading into, I presume, a pay-per-view match on Saturday, although they have not made that official. Maybe they're saving that for a Dynamite down the road or something. But yeah, Hook and Wheeler Yuta in this match have a long strike exchange, which ends with a double clothesline. Hook finally does get the advantage, but then Jon Moxley hits a nice RKO out of nowhere. The old three-quarters cutter hits him real nice with the old cutter. At that point, Orange Cassidy rolls into the ring, hits an orange punch on Jon Moxley, but Moxley basically no-sells it. It staggers him. He rubs his jaw, but Moxley does not go down. Not the first time we've seen Jon Moxley completely no-sell the orange punch, or sort of no-sell the orange punch. Moxley boots Orange Cassidy, sending him out of the ring. And at this point, Hook actually locks in the Taz Mission, the Red Rum, on Jon Moxley. And it would have been maybe the wrong decision, but it would have been pretty fun if Hook just tapped out Jon Moxley with the Red Rum right here. Maybe that would have been the right decision, but it would have lessened Orange Cassidy's win at the pay-per-view if Hook just beat this guy. Anyway, Moxley does need Wheeler Yuta's help to break up this Red Rum, this Taz Mission. Wheeler Yuta forearms Hook, leading Hook into the Death Rider. Moxley lays out Hook with the Death Rider, and Wheeler Yuta comes into the ring and gets the seat belt, which is his like weird twisting cradle thing, for the win. Wheeler Yuta pins Hook with the seat belt cradle. Your winners, the Blackpool Combat Club. The time of this match here, according to cagematch.net, 11 minutes and 29 seconds. I liked it. Overall, it was a pretty solid wrestling match. I think it achieved exactly what it set out to do. Kind of like the Super Mario Brothers movie. It was pretty good, you know? They had a goal, and by God, they met it. Let's go 3 out of 5. 3 seat belts out of a possible 5 seat belts for this one. Always wear your seat belt, kids. And, yeah, post-match, Jon Moxley cuts a promo, says Orange Cassidy ain't shit, and he never was. He was nothing. He's always going to be nothing. And Jon Moxley will grind him to dust and become the new international AEW champion. So there we go. A crisis of confidence here for Orange Cassidy, looking at his fist on the ground like, by God, my weapon, it didn't work. How am I going to beat Jon Moxley? But he will find a way, I'm sure. Good wrestling match by all involved, I thought. Tip of the cap to you fellas. We then see Kenny Omega, Chris Jericho, The Big Show, Paul White, and Kota Ibushi walking into Dynamite with some suits on. I guess this is a nod to the Yakuza game, to the Like a Dragon game. But they were looking like some Tarantino characters here. That was kind of fun. That brings us to the best thing on this wrestling program. Hangman Adam Page, Swerve Strickland promo. So Tony Schiavone is in the ring. He tells us that if there is any physicality between the next two participants here on the show, their match Saturday will be called off and both men will be suspended for the rest of 2023. That's kind of lazy pro wrestling storytelling. I mean, Hangman has a legitimate gripe. He has a reason to want to kill this man, so I get why you'd want to do that, I suppose. But you're still punishing Hangman for doing absolutely nothing wrong in this scenario. Yeah, it's a cliche wrestling trope, but we'll allow it because it led to this awesome promo. So Tony Schiavone calls out Swerve Strickland with Prince Nana, as he does, just dancing like a fool, like a brilliant, beautiful madman. It was kind of funny that Swerve comes out wearing all black, and then Hangman Page, the babyface, comes out wearing all black. I guess we will get some edge from this babyface. He is going to be probably something of an anti-hero here at Full Gear for the Texas Death Match between Hangman Page and Swerve Strickland. This promo was basically all Page. I don't think Swerve said a single thing. Swerve is generally, I think, a better promo than Hangman. So it was a little bit of a risk, but you could tell me this was the best promo of Hangman Page's entire career, honestly. Hangman Page killed it on the microphone on this night, saying that Swerve Strickland broke into his house because Swerve is a waste of life and a dumbass. Swerve is dumber now than he was 2 years ago when he got himself fired from WWE, he means, which, best thing that ever happened to Swerve. I don't know if you can call him dumb for that. Paige rubs it in further by saying Swerve isn't man enough to hold the AEW title like Adam Page did, and that's the reason why his fiance left him and why his kids won't talk to him. At which point the crowd goes, ooh, that was a burn. A burn and a half. Although, you notice that AEW wrestlers sure like to say your fiance left you. I feel like someone said that to MJF like 12 times. Now it's Swerve Strickland getting hit with that bomb. It's pretty funny. I hear that all the time on AEW programming for some reason. But Swerve doesn't want to be challenged. Swerve surrounds him with yes men. We've seen that before in wrestling and in life. And Prince Nana is just using him while doing his little dance and buying weed from the high school kids at the shows. But it doesn't matter because Hangman Page is going to knock out Prince Nana and steal his weed. To which the crowd chanted, steal his weed, steal his weed. So you know what? As flawed as AEW is, and there are some problems with the company to be sure, let us all appreciate that a wrestling show exists where you can hear a crowd full of people in Ontario, California, chant, steal his weed, and I'm watching that on TSN2 on a Wednesday evening. Life is good. Hangman Page says they don't need cops. Potentially, I disagree with that. Hangman Page and all cops are bastards guy perhaps didn't call the cops. He is the judge, jury, and executioner at the bottom of hell. And Adam Page wraps this up, but he throws down the microphone there, passionate, crowd going nuts. And then he's like, oh yeah, grabs the microphone back. It was a little bit of an awkward moment. And Adam Page says, well, the stipulation was to not lay my hands on Swerve. I was not allowed to punch Swerve Strickland, but they didn't say shit about Prince Nana. So Page attacks Prince Nana, beating the crap out of this man who did also break into Page's house. So fair play. While Swerve Strickland has to watch idly, he can't do anything. The security team runs in. Hangman Page gives a poor security guard a buckshot lariat for his trouble. Kind of a dick move by Page, but he's upset. We'll let it go. This was an excellent, excellent promo by Hangman Page. I cannot think of one that comes even close to this in terms of the best promos of his career. What's another truly memorable Hangman promo? Perhaps I'm forgetting one in the build to the Kenny Omega match. His title run itself was kind of botched, but the lead up to that Kenny match was pretty good, as I remember. I'm not sure if there's a true contender. This was the best promo of Hangman Page's career, the best segment in this entire feud, which has been bad, in my opinion. I have not liked the build-up to this feud as much as some people have. I don't think Swerve's doing a great job, and Swerve is a great promo. We've seen him cut awesome promos in AEW, but he's kind of been stumbling a little bit in this feud, I felt. Hangman Page picked up the ball and ran with it. Despite the shoddy promo work, perhaps, building up to this, and despite the absolutely ridiculous, stupid angle of Hangman Page's house, where Swerve Strickland broke in and cut a promo on an empty crib, threatening to, murder and abscond with Hangman Page's child. This was actually amazing. This righted the ship. This was the best thing in this feud. And now I am super stoked to see them have a Texas Death Match at AEW Full Gear Saturday, the 18th of November. So yeah, great stuff here. The best thing on Dynamite. The only thing that you must see from Dynamite, unless you like crazy in your, if you like wacky crazy wrestling, you must see the main event. If you like wrestle crap perhaps, although I think it was still a good match, I don't know, we'll get to the main event. I'm gonna work my thoughts out in real time there. Having said all that, the best thing on the show for sure, the best wrestling segment on this show, was this promo building up Hangman Page versus Swerve. Great stuff by Hangman Page. Great stuff. Backstage, Lexi Nair is with Roddy Strong and The Kingdom. Roderick Strong calls Adam Cole on the TV, as he's been doing when he gets called. Roderick Strong says that Maxwell Jacob Friedman is 100% the devil. He knows it. There's a man running around in Maxwell Jacob Friedman's devil mask, doing devilish things like MJF himself used to do. Obviously, that guy is Max, and he's lying to all of us. Adam Cole says, it's not Max. I promise it's not Max. But maybe it's you, Roderick Strong. Which Roderick Strong denies. Adam Cole hangs up. Roderick Strong yells, Adam! Like he does. And then the crowd yells it too. So hey, I guess it's getting over, although I find it to be really annoying. But yeah, if it's working for other people, then hey, who am I to judge? Match number 2 of the evening. It is a qualifier match, an eliminator match. The winner of this one will enter a triple threat match at the pay-per-view with Chris Statlander, TBS champion, and Julia Hart. So the winner of this will be the third participant in a triple threat match with Chris and Julia. It is Red Velvet versus Sky Blue. Primary colors explode here in this match. It was not crisp. It was a sloppy affair, but I thought it became a good match by the end. Sky Blue she might need a new finisher. When she's wrestling an opponent who's so much smaller than her, like Red Velvet is, they struggle to hold her up for the Code Blue, the Code Red Sunset Flip Bomb thing. She might need to bust that out against bigger opponents and then have like a submission or some kind of suplexy do, perhaps a top rope move to hit on smaller opponents. So yeah, I don't know. You'd see, this wasn't the cleanest, wasn't the crispest match, as I said. But it was overall a good affair. I think Sky Blue is improving a lot in the ring. She's getting a lot of ring time, building up that confidence. Red Velvet has always been underrated to me. Her only goal in life is to just stir it up. She just wants to do a sexy stretch while choking somebody and then stir it up for the crowd. And by God, I respect that. You love a wrestler whose only goal in life is to taunt. You know, it reminds me of playing those N64 wrestling games or any wrestling game. Just spam taunts, Red Velvet. We are all Red Velvet in some way. Pretty cool move where Sky Blue is seated on the top rope and Velvet hits like a wheelbarrow, kind of like I think you've seen this move in Lucha Libre a lot. It's like a wheelbarrow kind of face buster where she grabs her opponent with like a body scissors and drives them to the mat with the power of leg. Gotta love that. I was indeed surprised at the length of this match. It went over 10 minutes, actually. And there's lots of padding this match out. There was like an extended like 1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-1-1-1-1 sunset flip counter gimmick. But eventually Sky Blue does get the upper hand. She hits a knee lift, not unlike Mr. Perfect. And very slowly, gradually, hits her Code Blue finishing move, which is a sunset flip bomb. The Code Red. Darby Allin does it. Roxanne Perez does it. Lots of people do it. Code Blue for the 1-2-3. Your winner here, Sky Blue. So it was a little bit iffy. It was tough getting there. I think overall it was a good match. The crowd did like it. They were into it. They at one point gave them a "This is awesome" chant. Perhaps generous, but hey, again, who are we to judge? If it worked for the crowd, it definitely helped Sky Blue. I think it helped Red Velvet a little bit. It felt like a 5-minute match stretched over 10. There's lots of laying down, lots of like padding out stuff. But at the same time, I did like it overall. On the same level as the opener, I would say. Let's go 3 Red Velvet cakes out of a possible 5 Red Velvet cakes. Stir it up, girl. We're cheering for you. So that leaves us with Chris Statlander versus Julia Hart versus Sky Blue for the TBS title. Triple threat match at AEW Full Gear. Next, we have a hype video of Miro talking about his hot and flexible wife, basically explaining the story of why he is not being managed by CJ Perry currently, because he says that CJ has a tendency to bring out not only the worst in herself, but also in Miro. And I guess Miro is at this moment a babyface. He wants to play it on the straight and narrow. So Miro plans to show Daniel Garcia on Collision this week. I guess what a good Miro can do? I don't know. That part didn't quite track. But anyway, yes. Yeah. So Miro is not siding with CJ right now because CJ brings out the beast in this Miro. And Miro, I guess, presumably wants to be a good guy. CJ is with Andrade right now. And that's how that is going. That is the official explanation of that storyline there. Miro versus Daniel Garcia on Collision. That sounds like another L for Daniel Garcia. That shouldn't be happening, but what can you do? Actually, while we're on the subject, and I should have talked about this in the first match, but you could argue Hook should not have lost this tag team match. I kind of don't mind the decision. You got to give Wheeler Yuta something because he's been slipping down the fans' ranks. So the fact that Wheeler Yuta pinned Hook does help. Hook did have a submission locked in on Moxley, and Moxley needed help to get out of it. That could have been the end of Jon Moxley. You could argue that Hook could have beaten Moxley there. And also, Hook is already lost. So once you get your first loss, the second, third, fourth, I feel like don't matter as much. You shouldn't just start beating him like a drum, beating him like Daniel Garcia. But I don't mind the decision to have Hook lose. I saw a couple people on the old interweb upset that Hook lost. I like Hook as much as the next man. I think he's got a lot of potential. But it's okay to take an L now and then, especially in the way that he did it. Almost beating Moxley and then basically getting beaten down 2-on-1 to take the pin in a tag team match. I'm okay with that. But don't start beating him like you have been doing to Daniel Garcia. Like, Daniel Garcia is someone who the crowd wants to get behind, but he loses too often, so it's tough to support him. I know it's professional wrestling, and, you know, we all sort of know what the deal is, but at the same time, it's just a natural human thing to not cheer as much for the people who are losing all the time, because it feels as though, if anything else, that the office, the people booking the show, don't have faith in this man. Backstage, RJ City is with Mariah May in front of a locker room that says "Not Toni Storm." I imagine that's there as like an in-joke to not bother Toni Storm. Perhaps that is a reference that I'm missing, but I kind of giggled at that. I didn't like this promo. As far as Toni Storm promos go, huge fan of the character. I did not enjoy this one so much. I think they need to lose the black and white, and there's a crackling 1940s audio happening too. It's like the audio quality gets a lot worse when Toni Storm's on screen. That's a bad idea, right? Black and white is an artistic choice, I get it, but even then, I wouldn't do the black and white for a backstage promo anymore. But yeah, the fucking up the audio is a dumb idea. Don't do that. But yes, essentially Mariah May introduces herself to Toni Storm, says that if Toni needs anything, she can, you know, go gather it, go hunt and or gather it. And it appears we're going to get like Mariah May being some sort of a lackey, some sort of a assistant, perhaps, to Toni Storm, which is funny because Toni Storm already has a butler, Luther, the butler. But yes, no, we are getting Mariah May and Toni Storm together. Mariah May officially introducing herself to Toni. Toni blowing her off. This was slightly overwritten. Toni Storm is very charismatic, and she's found a role that really works for her. But this was a little bit of comedy that missed, in my opinion. And I hate the idea of screwing up the audio. You don't have to do that. I just think so many audio issues happen by accident on AEW. And it happens everywhere. You know, it happens on this podcast from time to time. You don't need to create audio issues to try to hammer home the fact that she's based on an old Hollywood starlet. Like, we get it. You don't need to make the audio from 1940s as well. That brings us to match number three. I thought this was a ton of fun. Samoa Joe versus a jobberoonie named John Cruz. I could watch Samoa Joe beat the crap out of a jabroni every day of the week. This was so much fun. You're probably familiar with this, but if you haven't seen Samoa Joe work, at least in a while, he does a thing where an opponent will jump at him for a dive, either inside or out of the ring, jump off the top rope, jump out of the ring onto him, and Samoa Joe will just walk away from him the way we always want wrestlers to do. Like, why is this guy just standing there with his arms open waiting to catch the other guy? Samoa Joe will just walk away and laugh at you. And every wrestling fan loves that. But as he was doing that in this match, John Cruz goes to the top, Samoa Joe just walks away, and John Cruz actually makes a gesture at him and looks at him like, what the fuck, bro? And then hits the dirt, absolutely eats shit on the canvas. That was hilarious. And that has already been memed. Samoa Joe walking away from this guy who in midair is like, WTF, bro. That leads directly to the finish where Samoa Joe chokes this clown out. Coquina clutch, rear naked choke for the win. Samoa Joe taps out John Cruz, jabroni John Cruz. 91 seconds, 1 minute and 31 seconds for this one. Honestly, my favorite thing on the show by a wide margin. Best match on the show. Solid B in the squash world. Solid match. 3.5 stars. 3.5 squashes. 3.5 WTF bros out of 5 for this one. Good match. Samoa Joe is the best. Just the absolute best. Post-match, Joe grabs the microphone, cuts a quick promo, saying that he is a California boy, and here in his home turf, he extends the offer to MJF one more time. Says that he could be his friend, and he's going to get a title shot no matter what, because I am Samoa Joe, and I am inevitable. So basically, time is running out on this offer for MJF. He's got to either take it or face the consequences. But either way, Samoa Joe is getting that title shot. Good stuff here. Good squash. Good promo. Good gravy. We love us some Samoa Joe. Then we get a hype video for the AEW Continental Classic. The Continental Classic is going to be AEW's take on the NBA in-season tournament. Or, of course, the G1, a round-robin professional wrestling tournament. Two groups of 6 men, 12 wrestlers involved overall. You wrestle everyone in your group once, 5 matches, and then I assume the 2 group winners play off in the finals. I'm not sure if there's a semifinals as well. But yes, a AEW G1, AEW in-season tournament here. Round Robin, Continental Classic, the C2. Boris called it the C1. I think it might be the C2. But anyway, here we go. Tony Khan has booked a G1. Bryan Danielson is in this tournament. He's the only man we know for sure that is in the Continental Classic Round Robin Tournamente. Match number 4, another tag team attraction, the Young Bucks here in California versus Pentagon and Commander. So some good and some bad. This was a spot heavy match. There were some phenomenal creative spots, but it was pretty hokey. This is some pretty hokey stuff. A lot of waiting for the thing to get off. A lot of standing in position. There's one moment where Pentagon Jr. has a Young Buck, a Jackson brother, in a fireman's carry, and Commander runs along the ropes, does the Undertaker rope walk, jumps off of the ropes onto Pentagon / Jackson brother's back, and then delivers a Canadian destroyer onto the other Jackson brother. So, like, a spectacular, super creative, fun wrestling move. That was just, it was super hokey and took forever to set up. And then it was kind of just the whole time. Like, it's the duality of wrestling, right? That kind of thing's not going to work for everybody. But I had a ton of fun watching this match. I had a smile the entire time. I thought this was some fun professional wrestling. And Commander did a really good job of being fake Rey Fénix in this match. This was basically the Lucha Brothers versus the Young Bucks. But with Commander playing the role of the Fénix, he is the understudy, he is the stand-in, and he did a good job. So the Young Bucks are going heel again, also, that's a thing. They managed to get booed in Ontario, California, which tip of the cap to them, that's pretty good. Good on them. I've done this rant before, just in a nutshell. I think it's silly to whine about who is heel and who is face in 2023, because it really doesn't matter. We all know the deal. We all know these are people playing roles. However, what I do think is fair is worrying that they flip motivations too much and for no reason. It makes a character inconsistent and hard to get behind when you can't really pin down what they're thinking or why. So the Young Bucks flip heel and face as much as the Big Show. They turn as the fucking wind blows. That's a bad thing. But the fact that they're going heel isn't necessarily bad, because I do think they're natural heels. They're naturally unlikable. Matt Jackson is, at least in my opinion, on the microphone. It really seems like he's always whining and trying to catch his breath. He's just a bad promo. Better suited to be a heel promo than a babyface who you're supposed to get behind and who is supposed to be charismatic and relatable. That is not Matt Jackson. But yes, a spectacular, a great tag team match. But I think the definition of an A-. this tag team match was. You know, there were some great spots. The crowd was really with it. Some spectacular action. But you knew exactly what it was going to be. A competitive match where Commander gets pinned. That's exactly what it was. You knew the Young Bucks were going heel. They went aggressive heel in this. The finish coming when Nick Jackson kicked both of his opponents in the balls, in the nether regions. And then Matt and Nick Jackson hit the BTE trigger. Actually, Nick also hit a disgusting Judas effect. Chris Jericho's spinning back elbow. Building up the Young Bucks versus Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho at the pay-per-view Full Gear. But yeah, this felt like the slightly lesser version, almost as good, but still a Diet Coke version of your better Young Bucks versus Lucha Brothers matches. Again, Commander did a good job. He was a good stand-in. I think Rey Fénix is a better Rey Fénix than Commander is a Rey Fénix. But Commander was like a 7 out of 10 Rey Fénix. This was a good match. Let's give it an A- in Canada. Your winners, the Young Bucks. 11 minutes and 58 seconds. They win with the BTE trigger. They had solid 80%, solid 4 out of 5. Let's go 4 bucks out of a possible 5 Milwaukee Bucks. And back from commercial, we get a Young Bucks promo. Matt Jackson huffing and a-puffing his way through this. Matt says sources have told him that the Young Bucks don't give a damn anymore. Strong words. Kenny Omega walks in, talks about how the Young Bucks, they're back to their old ways, back on their bullshit. And Nick, kind of being the less whiny of the two Bucks, the more grounded Buck, says, hey, Kenny, our heat isn't with you. It's with Chris Jericho. And after Saturday, you won't have to team with Jericho anymore. You could focus on the Elite again. Chris Jericho walks in a suit, trying to get Kenny Omega to leave with him. Calls the Bucks kids, petulant, whining children. That's the plural of a singular child. Anyway, yeah, the Bucks and Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega fought. It was a Young Bucks promo. Chris Children is what his name should have been. You know, Chris Children. Match number 5 on the evening, a tag team attraction. The Guns, Austin and Colton Gunn versus Pretty Peter Avalon and a man named Jacoby Watts. These guys were not introduced. They were not identified. They were immediately evaporated like the jabronis they were. 3-10 to Yuma on Jacoby Watts, 22 seconds, the Guns win a squash. They did this last week. They did this exact thing. This didn't need to be on the show. Post-match, Armpit Tattoo Gun gets on the microphone, says, if we just beat two guys, imagine what we're going to do to MJF 2-on-1 at Full Gear. I'm not sure that logic tracks, but fair enough. Yes, it is the Guns versus MJF. And perhaps a partner, if MJF can find one, at AEW Full Gear for the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championships. We are blessed with a heel Wardlow hype video. This guy is in a darkened arena, in a ring somewhere, presumably in Ontario, California, presumably the by God Toyota Center. But anyway, Wardlow says he's coming for MJF as God is his witness. Wardlow will make the devil his bitch, you see. By God, indeed. And then a jabroni comes up to, you know, accost Wardlow, try to get some reps in, try to start running the ropes. He's just trying to get some ring time. It's hard to come by now in AEW. And Wardlow absolutely raffle copters this poor soul. Why'd you have to try to fight Wardlow? You knew it was going to be a bad idea. So yes, heel Wardlow. He's a mean man, you see. And then we had the craziest damn match I've ever seen in my life. 8-man tag, like a Dragon Gaiden street fight. Kenny Omega, Kota Ibushi, Chris Jericho, and the Big Show Paul White versus Konosuke Takeshita, Powerhouse Hobbs, and Kyle Fletcher, the Don Callis family, featuring Brian Cage, who is on loan from Swerve's group because Sammy Guevara, who is also in the Don Callis family, has a concussion and could not be in this wrestling match. So of all people, Brian Cage took his place to take this L in this crazy hardcore street fight. Okay, so it's really sad to see both Kota Ibushi, honestly, and Big Show, Paul White, move around. I think Big Show is a little sadder because he can barely move. He didn't even make it to the ring in this match. He stood on the ramp while all four of the heels, the bad guys, ran into him. And then he went backstage to actually take a pretty crazy bump. Big Show was body slammed onto the hood of a car by Powerhouse Hobbs, which was dangerous for a number of reasons. And that was the end of the Big Show on this night. Believable that that would end his evening indeed. But yeah, it was a little sad to see Big Show lumbering around out there. But kudos to him for taking that crazy bump. That was amazing. Kota Ibushi used to be just breathtakingly athletic. So fast, so sudden, so precise in his movement in general. And his striking specifically. And his high flying. Just absolutely on the button. Just beautiful athletic wrestler. And now he's just looking old. It happens. Age catches up with all of us. But he's lumbering out there. He doesn't look like he's mentally present as well. He's kind of always lost in these matches. He's still taking insane bumps because he's Kota Ibushi. At one point, Kota Ibushi is on a bicycle driving down the ramp while, of course, the announcer Excalibur is doing a Dusty Rhodes impression. It's a bicycle! Ibushi, with a steel pipe in hand, hits the weakest pipe shots of all time, barely grazing his opponents as he bikes on by and slowly rides into a disgusting clothesline, and Brian Cage dumps this man on the crown of his head on the outside of the ring. And then we smash cut to the Big Show's departed corpse getting body slammed onto the hood of a car. Truly an insane, unhinged professional wrestling sequence. Chaos and terror, carnage in this match. We saw Brian Cage superplex Kenny Omega out of the ring through two tables on the outside. We saw Kyle Fletcher tombstone dear sweet Kota Ibushi onto a pile of chairs, which was covered by a sign. It looked like a Japanese restaurant sign that was actually styrofoam, but he still tombstoned this man on a pile of chairs outside of the ring. These were like set up chairs, like in the seated position. Kyle Fletcher on the apron picks up Kota Ibushi and tombstones him onto this pile of chairs featuring styrofoam board. This match went through a couple commercial breaks. The finish comes when Powerhouse Hobbs emerges from the back after murdering Big Show with a body slam. Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho get the best of the Powerhouse and duct tape him to the ropes. Not the stage picture I would have used here. And they also tape his mouth shut, which is a funny thing to do to a heel. Getting a little bit of an iffy stage picture. Let's move on to the finish, where Brian Cage is still alive, but not for long, as Chris Jericho gets hit by a pump handle slam. Brian Cage tries to hit the drill claw on Kenny Omega, but Chris Jericho emerges with, it looked like he hit him with the bat. I assume he hit him with the bat. He might have like dropped the bat mid shot. It was the weakest bat shot of all time regardless. And then Kenny Omega hits 1000 V triggers and the one winged angel on Brian Cage. Kenny Omega pins Brian Cage. Your winners in this 8-man wild affair, crazy hardcore tag team street fight. The Golden Jets, Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega, and Kota Ibushi and Paul White, 21 minutes and 1 second, according to cagematch.net. Kenny Omega pins Brian Cage with the one winged angel. By God. If you want to say this was literally one of the worst matches of the year, like one of the worst, up there with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre bullshit that Jeff Jarrett and Jeff Hardy did, I accept that. I will accept that. However, this is what I like in wrestling. Just a bit of fun sitting down. And I also watched it with somebody. My roommate joined me for this episode of Dynamite, and we were laughing, having a great time, watching this episode. Honestly, wrestling is best watched with other people, not just you brooding by yourself in some small closet. And I've been there too, but it's always great when you watch wrestling with friends. That's why we watch wrestling. That's why it exists. And I'm blessed to often watch wrestling with other people, and it's the best way to do it. And this was a fun match. This was a party match, something that you watch with your buddies, crank a couple beers, and you just laugh and have a blast. I think Big Show might be dead. I'm certain Kota Ibushi is dead. He had a brain buster on a bicycle in this match. He got tombstoned on a pile of chairs. He could barely walk coming into it. Kota Ibushi is deceased now. He is a dead man. But all in all, a ton of fun was had here. Let's call it 3 out of 5. It's barely a good match, but it's still a good match. It's above that Mendoza line. 3 out of 5. 3 broken backs out of a possible 5 broken backs. And then we got the wrap-up to Dynamite, a promo with MJF and Jay White. MJF comes out to the ring. A decent pop here for Maxwell Jacob Friedman. He's all business. He says that he apologizes to the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass for getting caught up in the crossfire that is MJF. He hopes they feel better. This, of course, is stemming from last week when Dynamite went off the air with the Acclaimed being beaten up by the Man in the Devil Mask and all of his lackeys. Of course, this Man in the Devil Mask might still be MJF. We shall see. I think it's just going to end up being Adam Cole. That's the thing that they've set up all year. That's the thing that makes most sense. It's also possible that they sign Will Ospreay, slide him under that mask. But I don't know. To me, that's going to make the story drag on too long. We shall see. MJF says the old Maxwell Jacob Friedman would have ran away despite being afraid, but he's not willing to quit. He will get his stolen world title back because Jay White has the physical belt but is not the champion. MJF is still the champion. He is the champion. He is proud to have made it to the mountaintop, but he does not have the belt to prove it. So he's coming to get that bully Jay White. He's going to win his belt back or die trying. And then MJF directly says to whoever stole his devil mask, MJF will find them and there will be hell to pay. So I do think it was clever the way they played it up where MJF could still easily be the one behind the mask. He was never physically present when the Acclaimed got beat up. He was in the ring, but that could have been a pre-tape for all we know. Although he did run out of the ring, and that one would be a little tougher to explain, but it is possible that MJF is the man behind the devil mask still. However, I don't think it is. I think that's supposed to be a red herring that we have waved off already. They got to keep teasing it to make him, part of the story, to make him a suspect, but I don't think it's going to end up being MJF. It's probably Adam Cole. 10% chance it's somebody else. Maybe like 70% Adam Cole, 20%-ish Will Ospreay, 10% is just completely off the board. Jay White appears. Good promo on Jay White's part here. I thought Jay did an excellent job. Good accounting of himself on this evening. Tells MJF, Jade Cargill style, to cut the shit. Stop embarrassing yourself. You try so hard to be the hero, but you've always been the villain. You're not fooling anybody with the devil mask, and you've already said you're the devil on multiple occasions. It's in your catchphrase. No one's on the level of the devil. And then Jay White gets into this, I know thing, which kind of was the through line of this promo. Lost me a little bit. He just said, I know, and you know, those physical words too many times, but it happens. Cute idea. He had to do something to stand out. Anyway, Jay White does say that Max was correct in saying they're very alike, but as such, Jay White knows exactly who MJF is, and these fans, these people will turn on you and then you will have nothing, because I'm taking that title, that championship, that mantle of best wrestler in AEW away from you officially at Full Gear, and I got 2 words left for you: get them. At which point, eat 'em, boys. The Bullet Club comes in from behind. They beat the crap out of MJF. I thought it was actually pretty clever here, where MJF had the advantage 1 versus 3 for a quick second. He laid out the guns. He laid out Juice Robinson. And then he appealed to the crowd. He stood up on the ropes, said, come on, baby, like Chris Jericho. and turned around into Juice Robinson's fist. Juice punched him in the face, and if he would have just kept focused, he might have been able to get out of there scot-free. But because he appealed to the people, because he let the crowd kind of win him over there, he got fucked in the end. And then the Bullet Club beat him up. Switchblade hits MJF with his finisher, sits on top of him, and Juice Robinson counts a fake 1, 2, 3, rings the bell. Switchblade gets a visual pinfall over MJF, leading to the show, almost guaranteeing that MJF is going to win and get the title belt back, but that's okay. And as Bullet Club celebrates, MJF down, unconscious in the ring, we cut to Samoa Joe backstage, thinking it over. The offer still stands, and Max might indeed need the help, but perhaps it will be a check that his ass can't cash, as they used to say in the 1990s. So yes, that would be your Dynamite episode. That is the final image. It was a good show, up and down, weird, but a lot of fun. A good one to laugh at, laugh with, have some beers, have some pretzeled bread, and enjoy a good episode of wrestling. Kind of a turn your brain off edition of AEW Dynamite. It was not highbrow theater on this night, but when is wrestling ever truly highbrow theater? So before we get out of here, let's quickly run down the card that we have so far for AEW Full Gear, November 18th, 2023, Saturday evening. MJF versus Switchblade Jay White for the AEW World title. We have Hangman Page versus Swerve Strickland, Texas Deathmatch. That should be a good one. Orange Cassidy, your AEW International Champion, defending that title against Jon Moxley, expecting a big win for Orange there. Trios match, Christian, Luchasaurus, and Nick Wayne versus Sting, Darby Allin, and the former Edge, Adam Copeland. So Christian versus Edge here in separate sides of a tag team match. We have the Golden Jets, Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega, versus the Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson. The winner of that match will become number one contenders to the AEW Tag Team Championships. We have Hikaru Shida versus Timeless Toni Storm for the AEW Women's title. And for the AEW TBS title, the Women's Intercontinental Championship, if you will, it is Chris Statlander versus Julia Hart versus Sky Blue in a triple threat match. For the AEW tag team titles, it is a fatal four-way tag team match. Ricky Starks and Big Bill, your champions, versus FTR, Cash Wheeler and Dax Harwood, versus the Kings of the Black Throne, Malakai Black and Brody King, versus La Facción Ingobernable, Rush and Dralístico. And we also have MJF defending his Ring of Honor tag team titles, possibly with an opponent to be named later, versus the Gun Club, Austin and Colton Gunn, subsidiary of the Bullet Club. And I expect Hook versus Wheeler Yuta for the FTW title to be added to this show, but it's possible that will be on a Dynamite to be named later. All right, good show, good episode. We have tons of amazing shows here on the Sunday Night's Main Event Network. Boris holding it down, the mothership, the main event, Sunday night. And tons of other awesome shows by some very, very talented podcasters. Got some great stuff here on the network. Check it all out, please. And thank you. And thank you all very much for sticking with us here on this podcasting journey. My name is Matthew Ederer. And to quote the great Brody Lee,